You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Today's episode of Locked On Wolves is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com, use promo code Locked On. You'll get 20% off your next order. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Happy hump day. Happy middle of the week. Happy day two of Timberwolves training camp, and or at least individual workouts and some media availability. Of course, no traditional media day this year. So a lot of that's being done via Zoom. Really, I guess all of it. So talk about some of those quotes from media availability. Ricky Rubio spoke to the media with Ryan Saunders and Gerson Rosas and Ed Davis as well on Tuesday. Today on Wednesday, there was Juancho Hernan Gomez, Malik Beasley talked to the media. There were some more Rubio quotes out there today. So I want to talk about some of the high points there, some of the conversations that were had, the questions that the media asked for Ryan Saunders and Ricky Rubio. And then a couple of other just kind of random notes that I'll actually hit first here off the top about players the Wolves either chased or did sign in free agency. A couple just kind of quick hitting quotes that I thought were interesting that we'll hit. And then today I want to likely finish the show by talking about free agent values. I alluded to this a little bit on Tuesday, or actually talked a little bit about it in relation to Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. John Hollinger, of course, the co-host of the fantastic Hollinger and Duncan podcast right here on the Locked On NBA Network. Or I should say Hollinger on The Athletic, of course, he also writes there and had an interesting series of free agent value. And I talked about how Hollis-Jefferson, Hollinger actually tweeted this after the Wolves signed him late on Monday, that he's one of the bargains of the year, of the offseason, that the Timberwolves got him on what's presumed to be a veteran's minimum contract. So I want to talk about some of the other players that the Wolves signed in free agency or re-signed in I guess every other case, and what their value is, as well as Jordan McLaughlin, who remains an unrestricted free agent at the moment, or excuse me, he's still technically a restricted free agent. The Wolves have not withdrawn their qualifying offer. So I want to talk through all of that as well. And where have the Wolves potentially overpaid, at least according to John Hollinger, and where have they done a good job in finding value? So that'll be the final topic of today's show. All right, before we get into everything, as always, a quick reminder off the top, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, whether that's on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, so a couple of quick notes. One, we talked about this now several weeks ago, but Facundo Campazzo, the Argentinian guard who has a really creative, exciting game, a primary ball handler, really a point guard that was going to come over to the NBA. It almost seemed like a sure thing late in the summer. I think maybe July, August, September-ish is when we talked about Campazzo as a likely addition to the Wolves roster because of the connection largely with Pablo Prigioni. They're close, of course, played together at one point, and Prigioni's been a part of the Argentinian national team for a long time as a player or a coach. And it seemed like Campazzo would end up in Minnesota. We'd even talked about Jordan McLaughlin maybe leaving because of that. Would Campazzo be the primary backup point guard? That was all before Ricky Rubio came back. And McLaughlin still may come back. At any rate, Campazzo, of course, signed with the Denver Nuggets. He gave he gave some quotes about his situation in Denver this week, and he said there was mild, this is a direct quote from Campazzo, there was mild interest from New York, and Minnesota made a hard run at my services with my friend Pablo Prigioni recruiting me all the time, but it was impossible to say no to Denver. Now, to be clear, Campazzo didn't sign with Denver until after draft night, after the Wolves acquired Ricky Rubio. And who knows, maybe in an alternate universe, if the Wolves don't trade for Ricky Rubio, if they keep James Johnson, maybe Campazzo comes to Minnesota as that secondary ball handler, or I should say not secondary ball handler, but another primary ball handler who's going to split those duties. Rubio and Russell, as I talked about on yesterday's show, there's a good chance they start together. They're certainly going to play a lot of minutes together. And maybe that would have been Campazzo's role. Now, there's a lot more risk involved in Campazzo. Well, he's been playing professionally and he's not a teenager. He's a seasoned, you know, veteran professional basketball player. He likely will make a solid transition. But Ricky Rubio is a pretty known commodity at this point. The only real question mark is, can he shoot 36% from the 3-point line again, or will he be back down in the 32% range? But everybody knows he's a good defender. He's a great playmaker. He's a great teammate. He's a good rebounder for the position. Everybody knows what he brings to the table. Campazzo at the NBA level, there's certainly some questions as to what he's going to bring, and who knows what his role is actually going to be in Denver. Obviously, they're shuffling that bench a little bit and have had a little bit of turnover there, but they already have such a deep roster. So interesting that that Campazzo said it was impossible to say no to Denver, but also notable that he went to Denver after the Timberwolves acquired Ricky Rubio, and there just simply aren't a ton of point guard minutes in Minnesota with two starting caliber point guards. I mean, the Wolves have probably two of the best, I don't know, 20-ish point guards in the league. I would still say Rubio's probably still a top 20 point guard. I mean, he'd start on every team he's on, except for maybe in Minnesota. And, you know, if you're on a team with like Kyrie Irving or Damian Lillard or something, but he's a starting caliber point guard in the NBA. And the Wolves just don't have those minutes to go around, which is likely why McLaughlin hasn't yet rejoined the Timberwolves. I think there's still a pretty good chance of that, as we've talked about quite a bit on here. The other thing I wanted to note was the comments. Darren Wolfson, of course, of Channel 5, KCP in the Twin Cities, and the Score North podcast that he does, or the podcast he does for Score North. He tweeted out that a friend, the way he said it, is a friend who's been around Tyler Cook, who of course is the training camp invitee, who was a two-way player at a time last year for Denver, was in the on a 10-day contract with the Cavs and on an actual NBA standard contract back in the G League, traded to the Oklahoma City Blue in the G League, back to Denver, was a substitute player in the bubble for the Nuggets. And, you know, it's pretty unlikely he makes the Timberwolves roster, but remember, they still have a second two-way contract available. So perhaps that's Tyler Cook. And here's the quote from Darren Wolfson's NBA friend. He says, quote, great kid, probably best as undersized five, athletic shot blocker, plays hard, rim roller and finisher at his best, dirty work on the boards, is what Doogie tweeted out. This is a tweet from Wednesday morning here on the second. So I, you know, that's the type of player you're looking for on a two-way deal, is somebody who can play the four, play some five. I mean, he's not going to stretch the floor much at all, but he's going to rebound and play hard. And the Wolves don't have that many of those guys. Now they're starting to add up a little bit by adding Ed Davis, who of course is different than Tyler Cook, but that same sort of tough-minded, defensive-minded rebounder, exclusively a 4-5. Tyler Cook is kind of in that mold. Hollis Jefferson's a 3-4, but he's more of the defensive-minded, tough player. And the Wolves are starting to kind of backfill their roster a little bit with some of those guys. And I actually think Cook would be a really nice two-way player, depending on how things go for him in training camp. So I thought that was an interesting note there from Doogie on Twitter. Next, what I want to do, as promised, is talk a little bit about some of these media availability quotes and then move on to free agent values in the final segment of today's show. Before we do all that, though, of course, we have to talk about our title sponsor of today's show, and that is our awesome friends at Built Bar. Of course, Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar of all time. It tastes exactly like a candy bar. It's new and improved, more delicious than ever. It was already great, but now there's a new package, new logo, and six new flavors. In addition to the 12 original flavors, the six new ones are apple almond crisp, carrot cake, cherry barcia, cookies and cream, lemon almond cheesecake, and caramel brownie. Built Bar is perfect for the health-conscious guy or gal. It'll help you lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. All of the bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high in protein and high in fiber, perfect if you're on a keto diet. Right now, still, for a limited time only, receive a free cooler with your purchase, but only while supplies last. Go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, coming up later this week, of course, preseason starts a week from Friday for the NBA. The Timberwolves' first game is a week from Saturday, which is the 12th. And we'll talk a lot more about the roster, what we're starting to hear from training camp, and any other news, as the Wolves still have that two-way contract spot open, as well as the final guaranteed roster spot as well. So plenty more roster talk later in the week. Right now, I want to talk a bit about the quotes that are coming out of the media availability kind of here at the first part of training camp for the Timberwolves. Ricky Rubio and Ed Davis, of course, as the two latest additions, both via trade, actually, that the Wolves made, spoke with the media with Ryan Saunders and Gerson Rosas on Zoom on Tuesday and had some interesting things to say about the season. Of course, Ricky was asked quite a bit about his rejoining of the Timberwolves and coming back to Minnesota after spending two seasons in Utah and one in Phoenix, had some great things to say. I talked about Minnesota being his home and, you know, always thought of it as his home and where he, you know, where he has a lot of happy memories. There were a couple of really good questions regarding the fit with the team and whether Saunders and, or excuse me, whether, yeah, well, whether Saunders would play Russell and Rubio together. Ron Saunders just simply said, yes, they're going to play together. We know that they're going to play together. Rubio was asked how he would feel about coming off the bench. And he said that he doesn't care as long as the team is winning and he's contributing to that winning and they're, you know, things are going as they should. Then he's totally fine with coming off the bench. And I think he said something about how he's used to being a starter, but basically, yeah, you know, he doesn't care as long as they're winning games. And so that was an interesting quote. It was a good question. It was a good conversation. Rubio said, this is a direct quote, transcribed by John Krasinski from the availability. He said, I feel like I have left with something that was unfinished, or I feel like I left with something that was unfinished. I would say I feel like I have a chance now to really prove myself again, prove I can help the team get to the playoffs. And Rosas notably really underscored the idea that acquiring Rubio and Davis wasn't simply about familiarity. And it talked about how they're just simply trying to acquire good players. And it's a bonus that their players and staff and front office staff, coaching staff and front office staff knows these players personally, at least in Davis's case, having played for David Vanterpool in Portland a couple of years ago. And then most recently in Brooklyn with Pablo Prigioni on the staff 2 years ago. I guess Davis was in Portland 3+ years ago. And there's that familiarity. Of course, Rubio knows Ryan Saunders very well and knows Towns very well. And also Juancho Hernan Gomez from the Spanish national team. And Rosas really kind of went to the paint on the idea that, hey, we're not just acquiring guys that we like. And even Ryan Saunders said, I think his quote was, we are not just acquiring guys that we think are good guys or that are nice guys or that we like to be around, something to that effect. Just that they want good players that fit their system. And obviously I think they downplayed it a little bit much because it's hard to ignore that almost every single player that's been brought in has some sort of connection to somebody on the staff. But then again, that's what happens when you have such a diverse staff that's worked for so many different organizations, whether it's Pascucci in the front office from Brooklyn, Prigioni on the bench from Brooklyn, Vanterpool on the bench from Portland, Gerson Rosas himself from Houston, some of the connections that they've got through Sachin Gupta to the Philadelphia organization, Detroit. They've got their tentacles all over, you know, from the league, different backgrounds, different perspectives, different, you know, I guess coaching trees, even in a sense that some of these guys have come from. And that's going to happen naturally at some point. But the Rubio connection is obviously it's impossible to ignore. And clearly he feels like he left unfinished business in Minnesota and he said that. So I thought those were interesting quotes. I thought that was probably the most revealing part of the media availability. Brian Saunders also talked about all the things that Rubio does outside the box score, both on the court and off the court as a leader. And then on the court, the little things he does, you know, the hustle plays he makes, his rebounding, which obviously does show up in the box score. But that's something that I think is a little bit overlooked with Rubio, his knack for the ball, his understanding of both ends of the floor of the scheme. You know, he's going to be in a new offensive and defensive scheme this year, but Rubio is going to lock into those schemes and know them better than anybody, surely. And that's another thing that Ed Davis is going to bring to the table too, is his experience in the defensive scheme in Portland, the offensive scheme in Brooklyn, and the ability for him to help kind of translate for Towns, to translate for some of the other younger players, whether it's a Jared Vanderbilt or a Naz Reid, who are going to need to learn the pick and roll, the drop scheme, the pick and roll, whether it be, there's actually a good question from Britt Robson of The Athletic, asked Ed Davis about the differences playing the four versus playing the five in the drop scheme and the pick and roll. And he basically said, it just kind of depends on with the other big that you're on the floor with and what their strengths and weaknesses are. And he mentioned playing a lot with Myers Leonard in Portland. You know, if Davis is on the floor with Towns and playing the four, he's going to have a different role than if he's the five and he's playing with, you know, say it's Jake Layman at the four or Rondae Hollis Jefferson at the four, who obviously have slightly different skill sets. But I thought it was a really enlightening conversation to try and kind of peel back the layers as to why Davis and Rubio were good acquisitions beyond their familiarity with the staff, with the other players. So there were some really interesting quotes in there. Also today, there was some on Wednesday, Juancho talked about his relationship with Ricky Rubio, and he had a quote where he said, Rubio is from Minnesota. If you ask him where he's been most happy in his life, he's going to say Minnesota. So I think Timberwolves fans are certainly excited to hear that. Hernan Gomez also talked about playing with Rubio. Rubio being the MVP of the World Cup just last year, and just the success that Rubio and Hernan Gomez have found together internationally. So Juancho had some good quotes there. He talked about also Karl-Anthony Towns. This is a direct quote. This one transcribed by Dane Moore. He said, he's a perennial MVP, meaning Towns, of course. We need him to be here 100%. We need him healthy. We need him to motivate. He's our leader. We're going to go as far as he wants to. So that's kind of a pressure on him, but I think he's ready to take the challenge. Rubio also had some quotes related to Towns and talking about how he thinks he knows how to motivate Towns, and hopefully him and he can help D'Angelo Russell as well. And so players like Rubio and Hernan Gomez, I mean, Rubio now is a bona fide veteran. Hernan Gomez is still relatively, you know, he's only 3 years into the league. This is year four for him. But these guys, and Rubio in particular, know that, you know, they're going to go as far as Towns and D'Angelo Russell take this team. And Hernan Gomez literally said that in that quote. But Rubio understanding the buttons he needs to push, the way he needs to motivate, the way he needs to encourage is extremely encouraging. And it is legitimately part of the reason that they brought Ricky Rubio in. The on-court stuff is all super important, but Ricky's turned into somebody that has helped Donovan Mitchell grow in Utah, Devin Booker grow in Phoenix, DeAndre Ayton in Phoenix as well. And teams see him as a valuable locker room presence and somebody who can lead also on the court by example. And that's certainly what the Wolves were paying for effectively when they traded for him. All right, I want to wrap today by talking about free agent values, how the Wolves did according to John Hollinger, based on his free agent values that he assigned to the Wolves, restricted free agents and the players that they ended up re-signing for the upcoming season. So we'll talk about that here next. All right, so talking about John Hollinger's articles on The Athletic, he originally posted them a few weeks ago, but has been updating them as free agency moved along. And he assigned a value. He talked about this a little bit on Tuesday's show, but if you missed it, basically Hollinger posted five articles, one for each position, and unveiled his best available free agents based on tier. So he had a max tier, more than the mid-level, but less than the max. Then he's got mid-level and less than the mid-level, but more than the minimum. And then he's got minimum type guys listed last. And he did that for each position. We talked a little bit about how he had Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at making, I think it was $11.8 million this year. Of course, the Wolves got him on a non-guaranteed training camp deal, which presumably will be the veteran's minimum if he makes the team. And that was a huge bargain. On the flip side of things, I've talked before on the show, I think I even played a clip not that long ago about Hollinger and Duncan talking about Beasley. Hollinger believed that Beasley would get overpaid in free agency because he's undersized, or the Hollinger's concerns, I should say, are that he's undersized. He's not a very good defender at all. And he doesn't really put the ball on the floor and score in the half court very often. And so he had concerns, and also the sustainability. I mean, he's been a good shooter throughout his career, but is he really going to shoot 43% on high volume threes? We don't know. So the number that Hollinger assigned to him in this exercise, he had him in the less than mid-level category, but more than the minimum. He had him assigned a value of $6.1 million and says, quote, Beasley will fetch a bigger number than this because he's just 24, which means teams can project in some added value increases in his age 25 and 26 seasons on a multi-year deal. Something around the mid-level exception feels right. He's a plus shooter who can score in transition, but is shaky on the ball and his defense comes and goes. In other words, his future is most likely that of a third wing on a decent team. End quote. And then he talks a little bit about the sunk cost fallacy that the Wolves may overpay to keep him or match any offer sheet, I guess, in restricted free agency, or what the Wolves did, which is they overpaid a little bit on the front end to try and retain him, which they did. And I mean, he's not wrong in the sense that they did overpay a little bit to keep him. But this is a point that I disagreed with Hollinger on when I played the clip several weeks ago about Beasley. I do think he can be a starting guard, and the Wolves are paying him like one. $15 million a year is starting guard money. It's not third guard money, which is, I guess, aligns with what Hollinger was saying about him having a value of $6.1 million. I do think that the defensive issues are real, and that's a concern. But the Wolves aren't going to ask him to score in a high usage capacity on the ball in the offense. He's not supposed to be a playmaker in the Wolves offense, and they paid a little bit of a premium, but if he can squeeze the trigger eight or nine times from deep and shoot over 40% and be dynamic in transition, because he does attack the rim and shoot he finishes at the rim extremely well in transition and can draw fouls and finish their contact, can make free throws. The concerns are really he just doesn't contribute much in the half-court offense other than catch and shoot from three-point range, and he's not a good defender. If one of those things can improve, and there's a lot out there today on Twitter about Beasley saying he wants to be all defense, which, of course, if that happens, the Wolves are I don't know, probably a top four seed in the West if Malik Beasley suddenly all defense. Neither of those things is going to happen, by the way. But if he can improve defensively and be average, or if he can do, you know, become a playmaker in the half court, assuming that, say, Anthony Edwards doesn't become that as a rookie, then yeah, I mean, then he's worth this contract and the Wolves are correct. I think he's worth somewhere between what Hollinger said he's worth and what the Wolves paid for him, because in the Wolves offense and their attack and in the fast paced offense that the Wolves want to play, Beasley's far more valuable playing at the breakneck speed that Ryan Saunders and the Timberwolves want to play at. I mean, the Wolves were, what, fourth in pace last year? The Nuggets were second to last in pace in the league. The Wolves use a ton of possessions per game, and that's the name of Malik Beasley's game. The name of Malik Beasley's game is getting down in transition, shooting trail threes, pulling up in transition, and stopping on a dime with his quick release. It's getting to the basket for a dunk and an and one. And I know that there's a lot of guys that in theory can do those things, but Beasley is really, really good at both of those things. And running with Ricky Rubio and D'Angelo Russell, pushing the ball up the court, Karl-Anthony Towns attacking the rim as well in transition. I mean, it gives the Wolves another dynamic athlete and above average, well above average shooter that the Wolves felt they needed to overpay a little bit to keep him going into his prime. And if they're right, then this ends up being a good deal. I was saying I hope they could get him for $12 million, which is obviously twice as much as Hollinger thinks he's worth. You know, $15 million, and then obviously the more pressing concern is some of the off-court concerns, the legal issues and some of the other headlines that Beasley's been making in recent days. But I think that Hollinger's analysis of him was maybe a little bit below what Beasley's going to ultimately bring to the table for this Timberwolves team. Moving on to a slight overpay, according to Hollinger, would be Juancho Hernan Gomez. Hollinger had him at $5.3 million, and in that category, in the category of, I guess, the same category, so less than the mid-level, but more than the minimum. And Juancho, of course, got roughly $7 million, averaged out over 3 years, 2 years plus a team option. And here's what Hollinger says. He says, Hernan Gomez is 25, established himself as a solid reserve forward who can make a three, and despite a thin frame, is a plus rebounder at power forward and a beast at the three. Side note, I don't know, he's not going to play much three for the Wolves this year, given the way the roster shakes out. But he says, defending in space is a bit of a problem for him, however, and he doesn't have the shot creation skill to play more than a secondary role. Nonetheless, a rebuilding Minnesota team is almost certain to bring him back at something around this price point and hope he can further develop into a high-end rotation piece, and then also that the Wolves can match any offer for him, so he'll likely stay, which is exactly what happened. The Wolves gave him a little bit more than this. And I said this just the other day on the show, he's a plus rebounder. I mean, he's at worst, he's an average rebounder. Next to Towns, that's super important to have somebody that's a better rebounder than, say, Robert Covington was at a small ball four. Now, in a vacuum, Covington's a better player than Hernan Gomez. There's no question. But in terms of fit next to Towns, you could argue Hernan Gomez is a little bit of a better fit because he's a better rebounder and he's switchable enough on defense. You know, he's not great, but he's an intelligent player. He understands defensive concepts. He understands the scheme clearly. He did well in this game in the 14 games after the trade last year. So, I think that Hollinger's assessment's right, and it's what I said all along. I was hoping they'd get him between $5 and $6 million, and unfortunately, they did have to pay him a little bit more than that. But good for Juancho that he got paid, and good, I guess, good for the Wolves to get him at only a slight overpay based on that. So the one other, or I guess two other guys that I would mention, we talked about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson being an $11 million a year plus player, according to Hollinger, and the Wolves got him for the minimum. The other one is Jordan McLaughlin, who remains a free agent. The Timberwolves, of course, still have the right to match any offer for him, and they still have a roster spot open. He's got McLaughlin in the same category as he has Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernan Gomez. Now, it's not quite apples to apples because obviously he did this by position, but in terms of point guards, he's got McLaughlin, in the same category as Trey Burke, Reggie Jackson, DJ Augustine, Javon Carter, Shane Larkin, JJ Barea, Yogi Ferrell, Brad Wanamaker, Raul Neto, Dellavedova, a bunch of guys. But he's actually got McLaughlin towards the top of this tier, and he has him at a salary of $6.4 million. And then he says, I'll just read directly what Hollinger said. He says, K, Yes, this number is a bullish assessment of McLaughlin, but he earned it with the quality of his play. He goes on to list some of his numbers, talks about how good he was in the G League the last couple of years. And while he could regress to the mean, he could be the backup for D'Angelo Russell this year. This was obviously written before the Wolves traded for Ricky Rubio. But the fact that Hollinger has him listed as a $6.4 million player speaks volumes about the true value of Jordan McLaughlin. I know there's tons of Timberwolves fans that love McLaughlin, and I still tend to think there's a really good chance he ends up back in Minnesota. I don't know what the Wolves would do with that final roster spot. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, it feels like it should be his, but could the Wolves make a move? Could somebody else get waived? I really, for McLaughlin's sake, I hope he's not back on a two-way. Selfishly, that'd be great. But of course, the Wolves already have one two-way deal out there, and that's Ashton Hagans, the former Kentucky point guard. So I don't know if McLaughlin's back or not. I tend to think he finds his way back. But obviously, it's not just Timberwolves fans that think he's very good. An astute talent evaluator such as John Hollinger feels the same way. And he's certainly not going to get $6 million, not in this climate and not really in any climate at this stage in his career. But he could be one of the better backup point guards in the league, and I still truly believe that. So hopefully he finds his way back to Minnesota. But another diamond in the rough, really, so that Gerson Rosas has uncovered. And so kudos to the Wolves front office for finding him. Now the question is, where does he fit? And does he fit with the Timberwolves moving forward? All right, that's all we have here on today's show. Of course, it's only Wednesday today, so we have two more shows still this week as training camp rolls along, or I guess really starts to get off the ground. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast. Of course, we're part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. And also a reminder, today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code Locked On. You'll get 20% off your next order. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.